Welcome to this Wednesday webcast. This week, as we begin again, it's been a while since we've done one. As it's FASD Awareness Month, we fought long and hard to get Ali Brown and Carol Hunter from FASD Hub Scotland along to, well, just have a chat really and share what's going on up in yonder motherland. Well, for me anyway, not for Al. So welcome, guys. Thank you for coming along.
Thanks for having us.
Now, Ali, we've had you on before, so I'm not going to ask you to introduce yourself. Sorry.
Ask you to introduce yourself. That seems only reasonable.
All right, Ali, you go first then. Introduce yourself. You have been on a couple of times actually, but go on. Introduce yourself.
Thanks, Scott. I have been on a couple of times.
You're a friend of the show.
Yeah, a friend of the show, definitely. I'm Ali Brown. I'm the project manager for FASD Hub Scotland, which is based in Scotland, as the name would suggest, and run and hosted by Adoption UK. So I work and employed by Adoption UK. And the FASD Hub is a service for parents and carers who have a loved one with a history of prenatal alcohol exposure, and that could be with or without an FASD diagnosis. And we support those parents in Scotland through our tiered support service. Do you want me to say more? You. I'm an adoptive parent myself. And I've got three adopted children, and one of my children has an FASD diagnosis, one possibly. And they're all prenatal alcohol exposed, got that history, and been an adoptive parent now for almost 10 years. Can't quite believe where that time has gone.
Yeah, goes so fast, and yet so slow.
The days drag and the months fly, as they say.
Now, Carol, we haven't spoken to you before, and I can't wait to hear a bit about you, because you've become quite, like, on social media, you've arrived, if you like, in terms of just, I'm aware of you now. So introduce yourself.
So my name is Carol Hunter. I am I was adopted as a young child, and I'm also an adult with FASD. So I've been involved with the FASD Hub Scotland as a volunteer, just really singing their praises and the services that they provide, and I'm doing as much as I can to promote, you know, positive outcomes of adults with FASD, and not to always focus on the negatives. With the right support and stuff, we can achieve great things. And through that, I am now the community engagement lead for Adoption UK, for the work that we're doing with the Promise, and I run the new hashtag E project, which I'll speak about later on.
Can I ask a question? Because I think Carol, incredibly brave to kind of stick your head above the parapet. And because I guess it's such an unknown diagnosis and a condition. Do you feel able to share a little bit about your own story, about how you kind of came to that and what's inspired you to then sort of do what you do?
So I found out that I had FASD a lot later in life. I didn't know had it at all growing up. My adoptive parents were aware of it because I was diagnosed at birth due to facial features and other aspects as well. So they adopted me fully knowing that I had what was called fetal alcohol syndrome at the time, back in the 80s, and were told basically not to expect much either socially or academically from me. Which, for them to then take a child on board knowing this, they wholeheartedly did that. My mum gave up work and stuff to make everything as educational as possible to prove everybody wrong that I would go on to achieve great things. And lo and behold, she was right, so I owe a lot to her. She is very stubborn like myself, so I'm very grateful for that. Obviously, I didn't know until I got my adoption file, which was a lot later in life when my adoptive dad passed away. Just because I felt that it wasn't right to look into that until that stage. And then I researched more into it. So now I go back and I'm like, Mum, remember when I did this? And remember when I did these silly things or acted in this way and you just thought I was a typical teenager? Well, actually, this is what caused it. And even to this day, she still doesn't believe it's a thing. And she's just like, no, none of that's true. So I'm very much a big believer about the nurturing element over nature and, you know, with the right support and stuff. And although it took me a while to, you know, go on and achieve more academically in my 30s, it's still there's no wrong path, you know, it just takes you to whatever way you go. I had to do a lot of life lessons and a lot of growing up to get to where I was to be ready to then commit to my academic studies. And when I went back to college after my dad passed away, because he was like, look, go back, you can achieve things, because I went to university and it didn't work out for me. But again, I had no support for my learning growing up. And I think if I did have that support, and my things maybe would have worked out a wee bit better. Yeah. But again, everything happens for a reason. You know, I got involved with the Fife College, who I also work for full time. I'm a very busy person. So I got involved with them, where you were allowed to speak. You know, it's a lot more focused at college on the individual rather than a number in a classroom. So they learned more about my background. I then became a care experience officer, which was the first college to ever bring that into place, supporting other students in similar situations. I then went on to become student president and get a lot of support for care experience students at the college. That then led to things with Open University and getting involved with all those steering groups as well. And again, through that into the FASD hub and stuff like that too. And eventually being employed by Fife College as a guidance advisor. So I've learned along the way that I actually had coping mechanisms that I didn't know about from my FASD. I have to be really overactive, or, you know, Ali will explain more about, like, you know, spiky profiles and stuff like that. When I was doing things that maybe were necessarily out of the norm or silly, if I keep overly busy, even now that keeps that at bay. So my partner will explain, I'm a bit of a nightmare if I'm not busy. So I work full time, I work part time, I study, I've got three kids and everything else that goes with that. And then that way when I stop, I just sleep and then the next day starts all over again. So yeah, that's my coping mechanism to get through it.
I mean, we could do this webcast and kind of unpick all of that. There's so much. Sorry, forget you lot. I just want to talk to Carol. There's so much stuff there to unpick. So we must. I think we should probably get you back on another time to talk. Maybe if you're willing to unpick some of that stuff. But that's it's remarkable, isn't it? Considering, you know, thinking about a diagnosis in the 80s. You know, when we talk about diagnoses now, it's really hard to get. But 40 years ago, probably unheard of almost. Well, not unheard of, because you did it. Thank you. That's so interesting.
No problem.
That's fascinating. Scott. So, I don't know what Scott's having a bit of a moment today, aren't you?
No, I wasn't actually. I was just thinking in terms of what's been happening and what's occurring. And I mean, the hub in Scotland has been doing a lot this last, obviously since it was established, and you know, I was still at Adoption UK when it first started. But what's been the focus for this month, Ali, in terms of FASD from the hub? I mean, we've all seen it, but it'd just be nice as a kind of a brief run through of what you've been up. You don't look actually too tired, which I'm surprised about, because I thought you'd be absolutely knackered.
Makeup does a lot for you. I am quite knackered, as my kids will tell you. But yeah, so we started the year with the whole kind of think differently, and that was quite on purpose leading up to FASD month for us. And our whole message has been around thinking differently, the fact that an individual with FASD thinks differently, you know, they perceive, experience the world in a different way. And actually, all of us around them, parents, carers, teachers, social workers, doctors, criminal justice system, etc., 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 need to think differently as well. And it's not about changing the individual. It's about us accommodating, about us supporting, looking for those strengths and building on them, and then giving, you know, scaffolding to where there's maybe weaknesses or challenges. And in doing so, then we can, you know, the individual can be successful. So that's been really our whole message. And we've done that through a few different mediums. So we've had some great people on. It's been a wee video every day from people across the world, actually. We've had Jeff Noble. Yeah. We've had Raja Mukherjee. We've had Carol and a couple of other adults with FASD who we've been working with. You know, we've had professors and people from research, people from other services as well. So they've all come on and just in a kind of 40 seconds around why we should think differently about FASD. And that's been fascinating, because people have spoken from lived experience and they've spoken from professional experience as well. And because it's been so broad, it's brought in so many different aspects. So There'll be the opportunity for people to go back and review those. We've also launched our FESD Makes Me Me animation, which is really exciting. We can maybe talk about that in a bit more detail, and Carol's been involved with that along with a group of young people as well. Throughout the month, we've had our FESD parent carer experience survey, and this is the first survey of its kind in the UK and Ireland, looking for anybody who is got a loved one who's got a prenatal alcohol history. So you don't have, you know, it's not for just adoptive parents, neither is our service. So everybody can fill it in, and you don't have to have an FESD diagnosis. You don't have to have gone through the assessment process. Maybe you have, maybe you haven't. It doesn't matter. We want to hear from everyone. And we've got nearly 500 people have answered that now, which has been fantastic. So that closes midnight tomorrow on the 30th. And then we've had like our social media facts going out each day, and we've had information about our services. We've launched several new fact sheets throughout the month. We've worked in partnership with other organizations to do that as well, and written a mountain of blogs have come out from the team. Either we've written them for ourselves or we've shared them in other organizations. So yeah, it's been pretty busy.
And compared to a couple of years ago, do you feel, I mean, you've just mentioned that you've got, you had a lot of people do those video clips and stuff. Do you feel like this, I want to say, do you feel like this has now got like proper attention compared to 3-4 years ago?
It's got more, I think. Yeah. I don't know that it's still got proper attention. I hear every day of people having big struggles in school. I hear every day of people having big struggles getting clinicians, particularly CAMS units, to understand the, you know, the, that spiky profile. So, you know, a child can sit in a room and just be the most delightful person that anyone's ever met, yet they can really struggle to sit at the tea table and not get overwhelmed by what everybody else is doing or what meal is on the plate in front of them, let alone, you know, interacting with other people and negotiating relationships and friendships and all of those things. So I think, yeah, we're further forward than we were. If I think about sort of 2018, when I'd say that was really when Adoption UK in Scotland really arrived with FESD. You know, we'd done things before then. We'd had a conference back in 2015, but that was a real turning point for us.
That's interesting.
It's massively different.
Because I remember, obviously, we did a podcast, I think, with yourself, maybe in 2018. And for 2 years, that was the most downloaded podcast. Because it just seemed to be, it sort of like lit a fire. People started to think differently. But I mean, you, like Scott said, it's not getting its proper recognition, but it's exponentially grown over the last, well, that's 3 years, isn't it? Just a bit more.
Huge. I mean, there's organizations that didn't exist, including us, like 3 years ago. Yeah. And people talking about it and research happening that wasn't. And, you know, 3 years ago, it was all still about zebrafish. No one hears about zebrafish anymore. You know, it's like, yeah, exactly, your face says it all. So, but, you know, now it's like research coming out from Salford, research coming out from the FAST team in Scotland that's really looking at, like, the people, which is the thing that matters. How can we support the individuals? What's going to make a difference? You know, really interesting stuff like that. We've been working with Miranda. I don't know if you guys have had her on, but you need to get Miranda Ayle-Donable on from Edinburgh. She's a clinical psychologist, educational psychologist, but also doing part-time PhD in FESD. And she's been working with a group of young people who've been doing like a photo analysis of their experience of having FESD. So really fascinating. And she's expanded that out to the UK now as well, so that's great, because the next cohort will be from across the UK. So there's all sorts of things going on which just weren't, you know, 3 or 4 years, but I think we all live in it, so we think about it, but I think
it's never quick enough when you're living in it. I've put out for people to add comments and questions, so I'm going to put up a question that we've been asked, and it's maybe, I don't want it to derail the conversation, but this is from Lynn G. Is it possible to get a diagnosis without medical evidence of alcohol consumption during pregnancy?
Right, okay, we're not doctors, we're not social workers, and we're not teachers, so that's our caveat.
Ignore that question.
But we can answer it. Facial features with under the sign guidelines, which the nice quality standards, which are due to come out in England sometime, state that prenatal alcohol exposure can be, or the three facial features can be used as evidence for prenatal alcohol exposure. So that would be a clinical judgment, and that's a as part of the diagnostic process. But that's the way that you could get a diagnosis if you didn't have documented evidence, because those three facial features are so strongly associated with prenatal alcohol exposure. They would go through a genetic screening to make sure there wasn't any other genetic reasoning, but yeah, that's the way you could have a diagnosis, which would be completely relevant and completely within all of the guidelines, but there not be written evidence.
Thank you. I'm sure that's exactly the answer they were looking for. Do appreciate that.
It's all right.
It's okay.
It is hard. I was just going to go back to something you said earlier, Ali, was I guess, because obviously live in Ireland now, and what's clear in Ireland, obviously there's less kind of adoption in the way that we know in the UK.
Yeah.
But there's still a very large number of kind of people who suffer from this condition, but it's not acknowledged in Ireland as much as it could be. How are we getting out to the kind of the families who aren't affected by adoption, but actually this could be a thing for them? I mean, I'm not putting you in the spot here. I'm just asking, is there like a plan for this? Do people who have children within their family who are biologically related understand and appreciate and acknowledge that this is a thing? Or is it kind of, is that another level on top of, you know, what you're trying to do?
Asking
for a friend, really.
Yeah, I think what we found, because our services for all parents and carers, majority of the people that have come through to this point have been adopted for kinship families or foster families. But we have a small cohort of adults and biological parents who, you know, are getting support through our service. And I think really recently I've seen that more people are getting in touch with us, because I think the word is spreading. I think we are also trying to make contact with those people through different means, you know, whether that's through the GP. We were involved in the e-learning module that the Scottish Government put out earlier this year, which has been taken on by the Royal College of GP. Mm-hmm. And obviously that's going to have a huge impact, that, you know, you go to your GP, and if you're able to express it in the right way and they're able to ask the right questions, then this should be flagged up and they should have that knowledge. So, you know, I think Al said it, it just doesn't happen quick enough. It's a massive, massive juggernaut of a ship that's being tried to turn round and let everybody see its sails, if you like. But I think there is more conversation. There's obviously been a lot more in the general press and media, and great people, Jan Griffin being one, who runs the Birth Mothers Group, International Birth Mothers Group. So there are people who are, you know, like Carol, talking about their lived experience. It's different to mine, different to yours, Scott. So, you know, I think all of our voices together make it much stronger.
Yeah.
I just had this thought.
Thinks
a thought on the webcast. Carol, I was thinking, you know, if you'd have said to someone in the mid-90s or 10 years ago or even 5 years ago, I've got a diagnosis of FAS, they would have gone, so what? No idea what you're talking about. You know, it's just a group of letters, or, you know, that you'd have had to have kind of start at the beginning and kind of go, well, this is what it means, this is why it happens, and yada, yada, yada. You know, to tell people all of the mess of it all. But now we're kind of reaching this stage where people start to know. That does that then mean that, whereas perhaps before people were just ignorant and kind of just took you as they found you, is it now that people are aware of it, they kind of go, oh, hang on, is there something wrong with you? Is it And as we raise awareness, does it kind of cause more problems for you? Is that, am I?
No, not necessarily, I wouldn't say. Not for me personally, anyway. I think for me, it's especially at the college and stuff as well, because they're hearing about what I do through my volunteering and other work, they're like, oh, could you come in and talk to this class? So, for example, we're getting Ali and that in to speak to students that are studying their BA Childhood Studies at Fife College to learn about FASD, which is great that that's happening. Although we'd like to then spread that, you know, to like lower level classes, all classes, mandatory. But, you know, we've got to start small and work our way big. But that would be the vision for that, to make sure it was part of the actual learning for people that are going into these professions. And then obviously branching out to other colleges and universities as well. But yeah, back in the 80s or 90s, nobody knew what it was. People still don't really know what it is now. And they still call it the wrong thing when they ask me questions about it and stuff. But again, I think it's just, it's not that they're being ignorant to it. If you don't know, you don't know. And that's why it's so important to be out there speaking about it and raising awareness and getting out there, and, you know, word spreads fast. But we just have to keep campaigning. And like Ali said, the collective voice is really powerful. And if we just, I'd like to think that in a couple of years' time would be, you know, what's been done up until now, I think is amazing. And we just want to keep topping that every year. But yeah, there is a big, large picture that we'd like to try and achieve, but that'll take a lot of chipping away to do.
I don't even know where to start with this one, to be honest with you, because it's just like, as a parent of someone who's been diagnosed with FSD as well, it's, what's important, I think, is that we empower people who have FSD to be able to, it's not about kind of using them, it's about being able to kind of ensure that they feel confident and able to share their voice. And, you know, absolutely. I mean, if you had known then what you know now, Carol, I mean, when you were younger, would you have kind of stuck your hand up and gone, right, I want to talk about this? Or would it be, you know, is that a okay, you're shaking your head, so that means
not, I'm still quite shy.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's just because, like, I'm confident around Ali and stuff, because I know them, but I still get really nervous even now speaking about it. That's just me, that's just something I need to work on. But in comparison to me 4 years ago, I've come on leaps and bounds,
right?
Because I was thrown into situations such as speaking at Parliament, that's totally not my bag at all, but I had people behind me saying, no, you're more than capable of doing this, we believe in you, they've supported me. And, you know, you slowly start to realize, do you know what, I actually can do this. And it does chip away. Obviously, I've still got that playing in the back of my mind, but I know how to cope a bit better. And for me, that's a big thing for me, because I've had a lot of support in like the last 5-6 years. And I've achieved like loads and experienced loads that I would never experience before. Like, it's totally changed what I wanted to do as a job and everything. But to kind of replicate that support that I had with our young people that we're working with, to say, look, this is my story. This is where I've got to. And it's not a case of wheeling people out for information. I've been there. I've been that person that's been, oh, we need information, get Carol back out. And I'm like, all right, okay. And you don't mind doing it because it's raising awareness, but when you're always the same person and it's the same voice all the time, it's like there's such a wide range of voices out there that we need to get. And especially with Marrow Way UK and the hashtag E project, I want to make sure that every single one of the children that's involved in that get the same experiences I did and achieve things and go on to achieve great things, you know, because we've given them that voice.
So tell us about the hashtag E project then, because I've seen it on social media, don't know much about it.
At least you've seen it. That's a
star. Well, exactly, yeah, that's a star, isn't it? Yeah.
So as a Scottish government, their initiative with the promise to ensure that all children in Scotland grow up loved, respected and realise their full potential. So AUK received funding, they put in a funding bid, and my role is the community engagement lead. So I had to put together a project with that money to ensure that we get lived experience at the heart of everything that we do, that we can improve our services and things like that too. So the hashtag E project is one, we call it engage, empower, educate and evolve. And that's why it's called hashtag E, because that's our wee taglines for it. And we want to engage with our young people to empower them to go on to create great things, for them to educate us to go on and create better resources and better services all round, and for us to not only evolve as a, you know, as a service, but also for the young people to evolve and, you know, develop and grow their confidence and go on to great things. So we've got groups for under nines, 10 to 13, 14 to 17, and also 18 plus, because again, 18 plus is still important. They've grew up, they've got lived experience, they've yeah. not had a chance to speak about it, so we need mm-hmm. to pull that in as well. And each month, you know, there'll be a theme that ties in with the promise, you know, targeted icebreakers and stuff like that. But they're fun mm-hmm. and it's developmental and it's to build their confidence, to give them the skills and stuff to go on. So it's very much targeted at the age groups that they're in, or transitions from like primary school to high school to college, or college into work and things like that as well.
Yeah.
So, for example, they might learn skills about being able to host an online meeting, taking notes, you know, all the sorts of skills that you'll learn from online stuff, as well as, you know, a fun face-to-face activity where possible. And these skills are transferable. So when they go from primary school to high school, because they've done those certain skills, they might want to get involved with like committees or become a prefect or something like that, and yeah. go to college to become, you know, student president, or, you know, a volunteer officer or something like that. So it's all very, very much, you know, developing them as individuals, increasing their confidence, you know, learning about what their talents and their skills are. What do you want to go on to do? We've got external agencies like MCR Pathways, Fife College are going to get involved. We've got employability coming in. So that there's going to be stuff that's very much tailored to that age group. And they're going to, although they're volunteering with us, I didn't want it to be a thing where we said, look, come along and we'll give you a free lunch voucher or a free Amazon voucher, because we want yeah. people to be really engaged with it, because they see it as a good project and they can see what they can gain from it. So there will be prizes and stuff along the way. You know, we're going to be doing a film. We're going to get them involved in changing our branding and our logos. They will eventually to go on to look at the leaflets and do age-specific leaflets with the right wording and the right language, but that'll take time. There's no point doing that at the start because they'll disengage. We want to build that relationship, do the fun things, find out what's important to them. And mm-hmm. Although we've already set out what the themes and stuff are, they're going to be co-designing it. So we'll say, look, this is what we've got planned. What do you like? What do you not? We'll chop and change it so that they're very much involved for the word go.
Yeah.
But if not, we've always got something there, you know, as a backup sort of thing. They're going to be not competing against each other, but every time they engage with it, they'll be earning volunteer points, and these will convert into little digital badges that they can download onto their CVs. That will show that they can work as part of a team, they've got good communication skills, all the things that, you know, they want to see. These are the skills that I've earned and that I've developed. And although there's going to be like online and face-to-face, if somebody just engages online but only uses the chat function, that's still engagement to me. If it's a case that we have to send them resources out and they don't attend online session, but then we can send it back via email or whatever, then that's still engagement to me. People might drop out and come back a couple of months later. That doesn't matter. There's no barriers at all. You know, we're going to put support plans in place for everybody that gets involved to make sure that we're supporting them fully as well. With a view that if we pull in the apron strings tight enough with the funding, that we'll have a big celebration event at the end of it and a big promotional video about, you know, what went well, what they enjoyed about it. So that they're ambassadors basically for this project, to sing for the rooftops about what's great about it and things like that, and hopefully encourage more people to get involved. So we're very much at the initial stages. The planning's done, the advertising's out. We've been advertising for 3 weeks now. We're going to go into the fourth week advertising, and then we're going to try and hit the ground running. We do have our film project with the Scottish Youth Film Festival, although the dates were quite limited with that. So that's happening next weekend and the weekend after. And it's only for 13 to 18. So again, I want to make sure that there's another film project for those that have missed out as well, to make sure that nobody feels that they didn't get to engage in something like that. So very, very excited about how it's going. We've currently got 50 young people signed up, which is great. We weren't sure what engagement would be like. Obviously, I hope that word of mouth of that would spread a wee bit. I do have other meetings with colleges and universities to boost our 18 plus numbers. And we've got a lot of backing from local authorities, one of which I thought was lovely, because what they're doing, rather than sending an email out, because emails get lost about all this information, they're going to physically send out letters to all the young people that they work with, so they receive it through the post, because they thought it was a bit more personal, and I thought that was a really nice touch for them to get something like that through. So I'm hoping that the numbers will double. That would be amazing, but we'll just need to see what happens.
So Ali, I've got a question for you, and then we'll come back to Carol. Where did you find this woman?
We stalked her on Twitter.
Because, I mean, Carol, you
she's amazing, isn't she?
Energy with this. Yeah. Seriously. Oh, my days.
About you know what I mean? I want to replicate what happened to me with other young people to show what they can achieve as well.
I mean,
to then go on and show other people, you know, it's just going to be a domino effect.
Like, I mean, you know, I know the guy, well, I know some of the guys at FASD Hub Scotland, but I mean, you know, you must just fit in so snugly with them because they've got so much energy to be able to do this. And, you know, you talk about it with such passion. So, I mean, is this just in Scotland then?
Yeah.
Yeah.
At the moment. And it's only funded for a year as well. So,
do you know, I lived in Scotland.
Achieve a lot in a small space of time.
Yeah, well, I'm sure you will. And I'm sure it'll be like extended as well if you've got that much engagement. I mean, I lived in Scotland in a time where things weren't so progressive. So to kind of listen to this kind of stuff as someone who is Scottish, it's just brilliant. You know, it's amazing to think that Scotland has been quite progressive compared to the rest of the UK. You know, we know there's nothing in Northern Ireland, nothing in England, nothing in Wales yet. So you know that's fantastic. I mean,
do you know of any plans to sort of replicate this across the Isles?
I know that there is various youth groups, you know, like in Wales and stuff like that as well, that are doing work with young people as like a youth program. Obviously, the role that I'm doing is specifically funded by this separate pot of funding, so it is specific just to Scotland only. But like, I think. Mm. Going forward, it'd be lovely to see that that's maybe something that's adopted permanently, because it'd be a shame to engage with the young people for a certain length of time and that with the possibility that might not continue. Yeah. Although we will continue, we're going to have the advisory group, which will be long term and it will remain, which is for 14 to 17 year olds, and we'll have a steering group for 18 plus. But obviously, there are people that might not feel like, I want people to know that they are, you know, capable of being in those groups, but they might not necessarily at that point be ready to go into it. So it's making sure that we try and keep that engagement with them. But then also the younger ones as well have a really, really powerful voice. And I think this creation of community and stuff like that is definitely something that I'd love to see long term, but we'll just need to see how that pans out. So trying to get as much as done as possible in a short space of time so we can evidence how important it is. Hopefully we'll allow that to happen.
Excellent. I thought you'd frozen there.
There's no point asking me to ask anything else because I'm just like floored. Especially this is going on in my home county, Al. I mean, come on, like, let's be honest. You know.
Oh, you must feel a strange longing inside of you to be drawn back to the lowlands, as it were.
Oh yes, because of the sound pandemic, I haven't been home for quite a while. So yes, you're correct in that. But yeah, anyway.
I'll ship you some haggis over. It's under the stereotypes.
Calm it down, mate. Calm it down. All right.
So thinking about the future, then, are you optimistic? I mean, either both of you, are you optimistic that we're going to see, do you see this continuing? Have you, you know, do you think this is going to be picked up and run with? Are you hopeful?
I think you've got to be.
Yeah, completely.
you can't not be. You've got to stay optimistic. It's what drives you. But yeah, I think, especially for the FASD Hub, I mean, Ali will tell you herself how she feels about it. But for me, even just being involved with them for this short while, I can see, you know, the coverage that it's getting, you know, it's hitting the ground running, and you see how much people are getting actively involved in it and the stuff that's coming from it. Although we've got a long way to go, I think, you know, now is the right time. Like, I don't know how Alan that's going to top next year, because they've done so much. But it's just fantastic. But yeah, you've got to stay optimistic and hopeful, because that hope's all you've got to cling on to. But I think that's what's got them to where they are now, and it's where, you know, it's got me to where I am now. So yeah, we'll definitely be aiming for the top, definitely.
Excellent. And what are you going to do next year?
Oh, I couldn't tell you that.
I was going to say to Ali, I mean, you know, I know from just someone that I happen to know that the FASD Hub is kind of, there's a lot of kind of want for that in other areas, and I'm not just talking about in the UK. I mean, how does that make you feel? I mean, you know, because I know that, you know, whilst you, you weren't just the person responsible. You are the main person responsible for FASD Hub Scotland. How does that make you feel to that people want to replicate FASD Hub in other countries? And I'm not talking, like I say, just in the UK. I'm talking other countries here. You must be very proud of what you've achieved.
Yeah, I think I'm... I think when I'm
you're
quite...
Just in that thing
I think I feel quite humble by that, actually. Yeah. You know, that's nice of you to say, but seriously, I couldn't do this by myself. You know, there's a team of people. And some people, just work 2.5 hours a week. But that 2.5 hours a week is making such a difference to the families that they're supporting. And the people, you know, who work exceptionally more hours a week than that, you know, we're doing it because we're passionate about it. Yeah. And there's a level of also, you know, we can't carry on forever like that. So there's a level of us sort of having to go, okay, well, you know, we've got to make sure that this is sustainable. Because it's not about one person or a set of individuals. It's about the service we deliver and the impacts we're making and structures and all of those things behind the scenes that nobody sees. Having all of that. And that's the beauty of being part of Adoption UK as well, actually, that, you know, I was taken ill at the beginning of the year, but probably many people didn't know that I was like hospitalized and ill for a little while and off work, but probably nobody knew because they shouldn't have, because actually it just carries on. And that's the beauty of being part of a bigger organization. You know, people can step in and take up the reins and kind of help. And that's totally what it should be. And I would love to see this. You know, one of the asks of Adoption UK this year during FESD month has been for other governments around the UK to take on what the Scottish Government has done in funding FESD Hub Scotland, so that we could see an FESD Hub England, Wales, Northern Ireland, Ireland, you know. And it's, you know, it's not that expensive. There's a lot of things, you know, autism. We often compare the prevalence of FESD to autism. But they get huge amounts of money. Yeah. And we're achieving a lot with not that much. Mm-hmm. And it would be good to have more, because then we could have Ploy Carroll and and do other things, and, you know, like, expand some of the other stuff that we're already doing, that we've got plans and hopes to do in the future. I would love to see that, and I think there's no reason why we shouldn't. I think that's the key thing. It's not like a kind of aspirational thing that wouldn't be achievable. It totally would be achievable. It's just people having the will, isn't it? Somebody somewhere going, I've got a pot of money, come on, we can work together.
Well, on that note, thank you both of you for joining us tonight. We know it took some organising, but we got there in the end. I think I should have been flying somewhere right now, actually. I think that was the reason why we initially couldn't do it tonight, but then we changed it. Carol, it's been a pleasure meeting you and chatting to you, and we would love to have you back at some point when you can, to talk about the project, which sounds absolutely amazing. Do you know what? I think about my son and how he must feel being like one of none that he knows of with this condition. You know, to be a part of something like that is absolutely fantastic. And, you know, keep seriously, from him to you, and I know how you feel, you know, do keep up the good work. And Ali, thank you so much for coming back again. You're like you're a friend of the show. I was going to say you're a bad penny, but you're not. You're a friend of the show.
It's a fine line.
I'll go with a compliment.
Yeah, there is a compliment in there somewhere. Listen, you should know me by now, Ali. If you don't, then we're knackered, really.
Yeah.
But keep up the good work, both of you, and thank you for joining us tonight. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. Welcome. Thank you too. Thanks for having us.